It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law, with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins with us this morning. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Ben.
What are we talking about today?
Ben, you know, the last several weeks, couple of weeks, we've talked about guardianship, and that's a very important aspect of, you know, the elder law practice, supporting the elderly and helping them with their many legal needs, which obviously here in this area, especially Carter County, my goodness, we have a lot of elderly, you know, folks and families. Today we're going to transition into another very important part of the elder law practice, which is asset protection. You know, we really get that question more than anything else. You know, mom or dad or grandma, grandpa, are declining. There may have been some type of diagnosis such as a dementia, Alzheimer's, that type of thing. And, you know, maybe they have their home that's paid for, a little bit of money, this type of situation.
Yeah.
And the question usually is, we've heard you can do something to protect what they work so hard to accumulate. What can you do?
Right.
Because we know in the event that they have to go into a care facility that it's very expensive. And that is correct. All of those assumptions are correct. It is very expensive. It's so expensive to the point that, you know, the average, you know, person just can't afford to cover that for very long. And they're also correct is in that there is something in planning that can be put in place in order to, you know, protect some, if not all, the assets depending on the circumstances. So we're going to demystify that a little bit today,
good.
Talk about those issues, talk about the twists and turns of that. It can be very complex, and we're going to try to simplify it for folks today.
All right. Maybe where do we start with that?
Well, Ben, just to add just a sentence or two to that introduction, I mean, absolutely. You know, long-term care now is every bit between $6,000 and $7,000 a month. So, you know, right off the top, we're talking anywhere from, you know, $72,000, you know, up a year forward of that. And, of course, you know, really very few people are able to afford that. Our clients have spent a lifetime saying that their home or their farm or whatever the case might be, their piece of heaven is paid for.
Right.
It's not unusual at all for our elder population to have no mortgage on their home place. And then, of course, they have saved for their future. Now, things have worked very well usually for these clients for a long, long time. But when you all of a sudden add an ingredient such as a, you know, $72,000 a year expenditure for wife and husband is still at home, or for husband and wife is still at home, that is just a scenario that most folks, that's a storm that most folks just are not able to weather. We, of course, begin these files, Ben, with an inventory conversation about all of the various assets. And we divide the assets into two categories. The first category being any kind of real property, which in the state of North Carolina is land. The land includes the house, the fences, the garages, the outbuildings. Those are all part of the land. And then, of course, are there any other, you know, lots? Are there any undivided interest in family farms? We see a lot of this in North Carolina where folks own their home, but, you know, they still own a percentage of a farm, you know, up in Lenoir County or some other great county, you know, with their brother and sister.
Exactly.
So we take a full inventory of all of their land holdings. And then we get a full inventory of all of their liquid holdings, which is everything else. And liquidity is a loaded word, but it really does mean everything else. Annuities, IRAs, CDs, bank accounts, you know, cash on hand. Any kind of asset that is available to them, okay, even cash value within a life insurance policy. You know, it is cash value. You can cash it in and spend that cash. So that has to be inventoried and made part of, you know, the conversation that is that initially occurs. Now, Wes and I, the first thing that we're going to do for clients such as this is to create a trust for the purpose of protecting their lands,
mm-hmm.
and transfer into the trust their land holdings. And again, most of the time, that's just their home.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
But again, sometimes there are other land holdings as well.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, this works much like we explain at our office that, you know, this is not so different than, you know, placing your land, you know, in a corporation, if you will, or an LLC, because a trust is a separate legal entity
mm-hmm.
than we as an individual.
Mm-hmm.
We have transferred the title out of our individual name into the name of a trust, which is a separate legal entity.
Mm-hmm.
And so creditors, and most particularly a nursing home, is not going to be able to attach an asset that's held and titled in the name of a trust.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason that we use a trust is because it is the simplest way to accomplish the objective. A corporation, an LLC, these are wonderful things, but they do require tax returns.
Right.
They do require an annual update.
Mm-hmm.
They do require annual fees with the Secretary of State, even some minimal, but yes, still a couple of $100 of attorney fee with a lawyer every year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. A trust, on the other hand, is kind of a, you know, one-stop shopping.
Mm-hmm.
Once it's done, there's no tax return because there's no income
right.
off of the home place.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There's no tax return. There's no annual upkeep fee with the Secretary of State or with the lawyer. And it's very simple.
Mm-hmm.
It's the simplest way that we're able to accomplish our objective.
Okay. Just a reminder, if you have a question you'd like to call in, you could do that.
Give me a call at 800-818-2255, locally at 247-7282 and 353-4674.
Two questions about that. When do you do that? I mean, when do you look at putting that home or those lands into a trust? At a certain age? Do you look at it at a certain state in your life or what?
Well, you know, different people have different ideas about that. I mean, mm-hmm. a lot of times we sit down with folks and talk with them about maybe just standard estate planning. Maybe they're concerned about tax issues in their estate, and maybe they're concerned about just getting their will, power of attorney,
mm-hmm.
healthcare power of attorney, living will, HIP authorization, just the standard type
mm-hmm.
estate planning done that here these days that we really need. Most people do need. And, you know, when we sit down with folks in that type of context, we are asking questions. We're not just saying, what do you want? I mean, obviously we spend probably average of an hour with folks on the initial appointment. We're asking questions about the family, what assets you have, those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
And in the event that the facts present themselves where maybe there is that piece of real property that we need to protect.
Right.
Maybe there is, you know, some savings that's there that we need to protect. Then it usually is advisable for us to then talk to them about that possibility of structuring your property
mm-hmm.
To protect it. Because the law currently allows us to do that. We don't have a crystal ball. We don't know,
sure.
you know, if
yeah.
that's going to change at some point in time. So it is something that we talk about even when there's not an imminent need.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
so are these revocable trusts?
That's a great question. Now you're getting into the weeds a little bit mm-hmm. because Cecil was talking about trust in
right,
general.
Right.
Really, it's a series of two trusts. The mm-hmm. first one is an irrevocable trust, and the second one is a revocable trust. And there's a little bit probably more complicated reason than
okay.
for the radio than would be, you know, dictate explanation for that. Those are the type of trusts, you know, that are used. And when we're talking about trust, there are different types of trusts for different types of needs mm-hmm. and uses. So these are very specialized. It's mm-hmm. not as though this is a can of trust that works for everything.
It's not always necessarily to create a spend down,
right.
a protection method.
But back to your question a moment mm-hmm. ago, when do folks start doing this? Some mm-hmm. people do it kind of part of their estate plan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's go ahead and get this done. So not only is the home place protected and not subject to you know, a Medicaid lien or what's called a state recovery at some point in time.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go ahead and get it done so the framework is set up, so we already have that trust. So in the event we need to do further spend down, we have that vehicle.
Right, right.
Some folks have an imminent need.
Mm-hmm.
And now our preference as the lawyers would be, let's go ahead and get this set up well in advance.
Yes.
Let's kind of consider this as part of our estate planning, because there's really no negative to it from the context of, you know, tax perspective or anything else.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of structuring the property in a way so that we're sure that we're not going to lose it in the event that there's a, you know, long-term health care need.
Okay. All right. We'll have more to come in just a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law. The right advice at the right time. You can find them online at harvellandcollins.com. And you can also call in with your questions, too, at 800-818-2255 or these local numbers.
247-7282 and 353-4674.
More to come in a moment. And welcome back to the program here with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law. Let's Talk Legal every Tuesday morning. Again, you can go online to harvellandcollins.com to find out more about them and also listen to past shows as well. But now we want to look at more of the where you put your fireman's hat on, right?
Okay. Well, let's talk about a few more details. First of all, Ben, all our listeners out there are saying, oh, but Wes and Cecil, isn't there a five-year look-back period?
Mm-hmm.
Don't we have to do this trust and have it accomplished 5 years before there's any, you know, mm-hmm. hospitalization or stay in a nursing home, anything of that nature? And there is absolutely been a five-year look-back rule. But due to the nature in which we make these transfers
mm-hmm.
into these trusts, we avoid the five-year look-back rule. And, of course, again, that gets into some technicalities.
Mm-hmm.
But we just do need our listeners to know, and we explain it in more detail with our clients during our conferences with our client. But the bottom line is that due to the nature in which we transfer the home place
mm-hmm.
and or the family farm or whatever the land might be, the way in which we transfer it does not trigger the sanction period, the five-year look-back rule.
Okay? Doesn't mean, though, you should wait, like you said.
Well, now, we brought up the fact that some clients, you know, gosh, you know, in their late 50s, early 60s, doing great
mm-hmm.
as part of their will planning, they will go ahead and set up this trust.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really plan to move. They're pretty settled in their home right there. That's another question that we get. It doesn't matter if they do move. The
mm-hmm.
trust is, you know, a blanket, if you will, holding pot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It can hold 501 Front Street or it can hold 601 Main Street.
Right.
It doesn't matter which property it holds. That's just deed work
mm-hmm.
Within the context of the trust. The trust parallels their will in that it leaves everything a third, a third, and a third to their three children. That's probably not going to change in most files.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right.
It's going to go ahead and have some detail in it in terms of what happens if a child dies,
mm-hmm.
if, God forbid, that happen, a parent bury a child. But it does happen, unfortunately.
Yes.
And then the trust needs to say that if a child were to die, then their share would go to their grandchildren, if that's, in fact, what the client is desirous of accomplishing.
Mm-hmm.
Or it can say that if a child dies, it laps and goes to the other two children.
Mm-hmm.
So again, these details are discussed and that trust is set up in a way, hopefully, where there does not need to be amendment or modification to it. It's our job, it's Wes's job, it's my job, other lawyers at our office, to make sure that we anticipate these various contingencies,
mm-hmm.
okay? The death of a child, an alternate trustee,
mm-hmm.
okay? All of these kinds of things need to be talked about and discussed so that this trust does not necessarily need to be modified or amended. So, yes, we have people who are doing very well and as a part of their estate plan put these trusts together on the front end. We also, as we mentioned, have folks who come in who say that, you know, my husband is at the hospital. He is going to be transferred to one of our local nursing home facilities, Mr. Harvell, and I need to talk to you about what, if anything, we can do to begin the process of protecting some of our assets. Talk to me about what the law will allow me to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is a situation where it is kind of an urgent situation, and we do have those situations. Again, because of the fact that we're able to avoid the look-back rule, we are able to see clients who are in imminent need of mm-hmm. this kind of planning. Now, one more thing that I'd like to say with regard to the timing of this, it is very nice, and I liked the word that Wes used, which was, you know, the vehicle, mm-hmm. you know, the tool of the trade.
Right.
The trust is what we are going to need down the road in order to protect the assets, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
And if mom and dad have set it up, you know, in their 60s, their 70s, their young 80s, and they are the people who signed the trust,
mm-hmm.
who established it, then it is more palatable for their daughter or their son to come in than under the well-drafted power of attorney
mm-hmm.
and attend to the details later on. So I do explain this to clients that, you know, it's awfully nice if we go so far as to create the framework for our children
mm-hmm.
so that it's there for them. That then is a stated intention by our parent that that's planning that they wanted to accomplish.
Right.
And I, therefore, as the power of attorney, am just kind of following through with what my parents already established. This is a very valid point
mm-hmm.
because Wes and I also see clients where mom and dad are not well. This
mm-hmm.
happened to me just yesterday. And the dear son, one and only child, that's always a lot of responsibility for
mm-hmm.
those, is in from Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right.
Okay. Caring for his parents. And they really are not able
mm-hmm.
to set up these trusts. Now, fortunately, these clients had been in to see our firm, about 3 years ago. And got well drafted, have well drafted and very specialized and specific durable powers of attorney, which are therefore going to allow this son from Oklahoma to establish these trusts.
Mm-hmm.
But those are good facts, Ben.
Right.
Suppose those people did not have a power of attorney. Suppose they did not have a power of attorney that had the appropriate kind of gifting authority
mm-hmm.
within the power of attorney. Then this son from Oklahoma would be kind of dead in the water
mm-hmm.
because he would not have the authority to establish these trusts. Now, he's going to do it for his parents, and he's also in the lucky position of being the only child.
Right.
Okay.
Right, yeah.
But I'm trying to contrast here the difference between the parents establishing their trust
mm-hmm.
and their trust being established by their child, who is their power of attorney.
And welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins.
So we've kind of gotten into this conversation of contrasting between
mm-hmm.
doing this as part of just a regular estate planning and
right.
then kind of the, as you say, we had to put the fireman's hat on and put out the fire here and get this done very quickly. So Cecil contrasted there, you know, those two issues and kind of focused in on the issue of, you know, if the parents set this up years ago, then the children are the ones finishing the planning.
Mm-hmm.
Now when it becomes
right.
more imminent, we're following through with the parents' initial plans, which is always a good thing. Another aspect of that, which is interesting, is folks, you know, a lot of times assume that their Medicare, since it covers everything else just about,
right.
is going to cover this nursing home expense as well. Well, that's not the case.
Yeah.
Medicare usually covers 20 days.
Mm-hmm.
And it will cover up to 100 days if there's improvement beyond the 20. But
right.
I can tell you in most cases, it cuts off at that 20-day period of time.
Yep.
So then after that 20th day, you know, hits, and in the event we're not able to get out of the nursing home
mm-hmm.
Based on our medical need, then, you know, we start getting that, getting billed a couple hundred dollars per day, mm-hmm. you know, which ends up being about that $6,500 per month. So again, from the perspective of the lawyer, we would rather have the time, you know, to just kind of do this at our own pace. So we're not having to put everything else aside that we're working on, go gather up deeds, information, information regarding our finances, these type of things. That's one aspect of it. The other aspect of it is if we end up in a spin down type situation,
right.
and we only have a short period of time to get it because of this medical need that mm-hmm. is hit, you know, no matter what it's been, it sure is nice to go ahead and have those trusts in place because
mm-hmm.
that part of it's done, and that's a really big part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can just focus on gathering up what we have and working with the child or sometimes working with the spouse, then it really is a more controlled, at our pace,
mm-hmm.
at a reasonable pace type procedure as opposed to, you know, kind of the fire sale type thing. And frankly speaking, it really, if it takes less of the attorney's time, it usually costs the client less.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to take us less time if we're doing it in this controlled atmosphere mm-hmm. as opposed to this less controlled, kind of chaotic, quickly, let's get all this done atmosphere.
But I would imagine the question comes up and says, but I've always heard that the house is not a countable asset or something like that. But recovery is the issue.
Right. That is a catch-22 because mm-hmm. you can certainly apply and be approved for Medicaid and the house with owning the house
mm-hmm.
by signing an intent to return home. But in the event that Medicaid is then approved and then there's a death of the person who's receiving Medicaid under certain circumstances, then a lien is attached on that house.
Mm-hmm.
So it may feel like everything's okay. Medicaid is covering this bill. We did what we need to do. But then when the person passes away, all of a sudden this letter comes in from third party recovery. You owe $175,000. Well, the planning we do addresses that, so we avoid that lien completely. That's mm-hmm. part of the trust planning as well.
And that's why you want to get in touch with the folks from Harvell & Collins, Attorneys at Law, 1107 Bridges Street in Moorhead City, online at harvellandcollins.com, and you can reach them at 726-9050. That's 726-9050, 1107 Bridges Street, Moorhead City, for Harvell & Collins. Coming up in just a moment, we'll get you an update on the news. We'll also take a look at what's going on, Sean Hannity's update as well, update on the weather, and our community moment coming up.